You are listening to the Evolvepreneur After Hours show, and I'm your host, Richard Ray. My mission is to help entrepreneurs make a difference and navigate the messy world of startup or relaunch, commonly called a pivot. Join me today where we dig deep with our guest and get you the best concepts and strategies to fast-track your business. Today's special guest is Ashton Rodenheiser. Ashton has followed her passion for helping people communicate their ideas and combined that with creativity by founding Mind's Eye Creative Consulting. Over the years, she has brought over 2,500 presentations and conversations to life, either on paper or digitally. Today, we're talking about how to doodle your way to success. Ashton, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Richard. What a pleasure to be here with you today.
Ashton, great to have you here. And as I always ask my guests first, where in the world are you?
I am in a little tiny province in Canada called Nova Scotia.
Oh, I have heard of it. I've never been, though. Sounds like an interesting place.
Yes, and I live off a dirt road off of a dirt road. So go into the woods, and that's where I am.
We'll find you there.
That you'll find me somewhere in there, yeah.
Let's woodland out. Okay, so let's get into this. Ashton, tell us a little bit about yourself. It sounds like you do some really fun and interesting things.
Yeah, so I have been sort of on this entrepreneur train for about 10 years now, which is pretty wild to think about. And I just kind of crossed the 10-year mark. And I work with different organizations and businesses, and they invite me into their meetings or conferences or conversations to make them like a little less boring, bring them to life a little bit. So as those presentations or conversations are unfolding, I'm literally drawing the conversation as it's happening in real time. So when that's in person, I do that with paper and markers on a wall, paper hopefully on the wall. And when I do it digitally, I use my big screen and capture in that way and do zoom in. You know, instead of seeing my face there, you'd see my drawing screen. So, I work in lots of different ways in lots of different sectors, like name an industry, and I've probably touched it at least once or twice. So, it's been such a joy to be able to draw professionally in a way that is less focused on creating a piece of quote-unquote artwork, but more about allowing people to experience information or their ideas in a visual way.
So were you the kid who would get in trouble at school because you were doodling in the class and the teacher would go, you must concentrate on this?
I definitely was a doodler, probably not as much as other kids were. It's funny because even though I've always been very creative, I didn't actually draw a whole lot until I learned about this thing, the world of like visual communication and visual thinking. And I usually tell people, you know, if anyone ever gets in trouble for doodling, you come and talk to me and I'll set them straight.
Fantastic.
The doodle has definitely gone.
Years ago.
Yeah, the doodle has definitely gotten a bad rap. So I feel like sometimes I call myself like a professional doodler or a doodling advocate because it can be a very beautiful, like non-threatening, barrier-free way to be able to start this sort of journey of visual thinking. And I think we do students a huge disservice by not, by kind of like discouraging drawings in their thinking and learning.
And how did this career actually start? Because you said you've been doing it for 10 years. So you went through your education and then you've migrated to probably a few things. But to actually be, as you say, a professional doodler, how did that happen?
Yeah, so I learned that this was a thing while I was working at a nonprofit as a facilitator. Mm-hmm. And I started as a facilitator by, it was a family center. So I started there as an early childhood educator. So that's actually sort of this very odd path that I got to here, from early childhood educator to facilitator to graphic facilitator or live illustrator. So I don't know if I would have ever sort of come across this unless I kind of was in the world of facilitation. And I really love, and I still do it a bit and co-facilitate things with folks, where you're doing a very similar thing. You're kind of like the professional listener, which is what you're also doing when you're drawing out the conversation, right? But instead of feeding back just in words, what you're hearing and the connections and the conversation in the room, now I can do it in pictures. So, and I started to incorporate some of this, like a little bit, into my facilitation work and started to experience the value and benefit for myself. And that's when I decided that I thought this thing was like the coolest thing ever. And I was like, how can I figure out how to do this full time? Like, and so I kind of left full facilitation by the wayside and decided that I really wanted to learn how to do this really well. And in order to do that, I felt like I had to really kind of go all in. And it's not like a lot of people are hiring for these types of jobs. There's a handful of agencies around the world, but really it's pretty impossible to especially if you're a beginner, to get a job in this kind of field. So kind of just honestly by default, you're like, I guess I have to start a business. So
simple as that.
Honestly, that's kind of how it happened. And I've just been making it up as I go along ever since.
And how do you market yourself to people? Because we'll get into the, you know, obviously the benefits of what you do. But to actually market yourself and to say to people, you'll get the benefits because of this. How do you go about that? Because it is, as you say, it sounds quite niche in some ways.
It is. So I had someone at it, and it was actually a facilitator at an event one time that he spoke at, and I hunted him down after he spoke, and as I really wanted to know him as a facilitator, he will not work with a client unless they allow him to bring in someone like me. And I said, like, how do I find these facilitators that have the same philosophy? And he said, the unique challenge of this type of thing is that it's considered an experienced good. It's very challenging to describe or even just show past work without having some sort of personal experience with it, right? So when I really wanted to try to figure out how to do more of this, like early days of my business, I just tried to put myself in as many rooms as I possibly could with the most people possible, because there would always be a handful of people that would come up to me at an event and they'd be like, oh my gosh, we have our strategic planning happening in a few months, or oh my gosh, there's an event coming up, we'd love to have you, right? So it's a lot easier from a sales perspective if they have experienced the value of it. And honestly, the last number of years, in specifically, that's how I've gotten all of my work.
So it's almost become word of mouth. People are trying to do something. They want to make it interesting and unusual. Because, hey, we've all been to, you know, projects, or we've been to conferences and they're the same over and over again. It sounds like the sort of, you know, service that you offer will make it way more interesting and keep people engaged.
It's a little bit different than word of mouth, though, because honestly, referrals rarely work out. So let's say someone was at a conference and they saw me and they were like freaking out because they thought it was the coolest thing they ever saw. They go and tell their colleague who wasn't at that event about it. They can show them the pictures, but they weren't there.
They didn't get that experience.
They didn't experience it, right? So usually by the time I get passed to that person who hasn't experienced it, they're like, what is my colleague talking about? I have no idea what you do. And then, of course, when I put the quote together, like, that's expensive.
Yeah, that's expensive. And you're just doodling. What on earth is going on here?
Right? I could explain the value and the benefits all day long. I could show them the thousands of examples that I have. But it's definitely a challenge. Like, I've had a few people hire me that had complete trust in the process. They were like, I don't know what this is, but it sounds cool. It sounds like it would help people, but let's just get you to come in and try it out. And sometimes it means the first time they engage me, they'll bring me on for like a smaller project, mm-hmm. or like the 3-day conference, but they'll just bring me in for one day because they're just like not sure how it's going to go. But then, of course, once you get there, they're like, oh, darn, we should have brought you in for all 3 days. And I'm like, yeah, I know. But, you know, I don't begrudge them, because they're like looking at their budgets and they're trying to make it work, right? Where, you know, now I have clients that they're like, oh, well, we just put you in the budget. Like, there's like, of course, we have to have her there. It's that important, right? So, yeah, it definitely is a, like, I've had someone say to me, it's almost like edgy marketing, but like more in the like education marketing, because, or like experience marketing. I don't like know what that looks like, but it's definitely an interesting way to work. But early days, in order to get in lots of rooms, I honestly just started emailing like hundreds, if not more, people. And I would hope that I would hit somebody who did experience it before. Those were the emails that would convert the most, right? I would research them. I'd find out a little bit about them. I'd find out, like, I would think about why it is that makes them unique and special, why I think I could work with them and connect with them. And usually the ones that, like, I ended up on a call or ended up working with, they're like, oh my gosh, I saw this thing at an event one time and it was so amazing, right?
Interesting.
Probably wasn't me. Probably was someone else being amazing. And that's okay, because the way I look at it is industry. When someone sees me, it's going to help out someone else in the industry as well, and vice versa, right? Because it's a hard thing to Google, right? It's like conference drawing person, doodle at the meeting. Like,
there's not an accepted term.
Like in our industry, yeah, we call ourselves mostly a graphic recorder or a graphic facilitator, but those are not like friendly to people who are hiring us. So that's why I have been calling myself more of a live illustrator these days, because it feels a little bit more like friendly when it comes to people being able to call it something that relates. But I've been called so many interesting things. I always like to write them down. I think one of my favorite one is like visual storyteller. I like that one.
That's a great title. Yeah. I love that as a title. So it sounds like you put a huge amount of effort into the marketing, because it is niche what you do, but when people get their heads around what you're actually doing, they get the benefits.
Yeah.
Are there any special tools that you use to do the research and to find the people that you should be going after?
Yeah, so I'll speak to my early days when I did a lot of outreach. So every time I would get a piece of work in a very specific industry, a very, very specific topic, I would just double down on that topic, to be honest with you. So I started working with a very particular group of software engineers. So what I did was I took that very particular group of software engineers and I just said, what else is around? What companies? What
colleagues? It's similar to that.
Right. So then I can say, hey, I did this event in your same topic, because everyone thinks their like industry is like the most important. Right. So they're like, oh, our information's really complicated. I'm like, I'm sure it is. Like, I'm sure it is. You know, I've heard some pretty complicated things in my work. Right. It's probably not that special in terms of like the hierarchy of how complicated something is. So yeah, I would just sort of lean in on my experience. I'd be like, hey, I did this event and you're the same type of event. Like you're working with the same people, in the same industry. So then it kind of cuts through that, like, oh, well, she's not going to understand what we're talking about kind of thing. I'm like, well, I did it at this event and here were some of the examples. So, yeah. And then trying to get like testimonials of some of the conference organizers and being able to kind of like leverage that as much as I possibly could. And that particular like software group, honestly, that was like way back, like years and years ago now, it kind of snowballed into like so many different tech sectors. So ended up being like, and still is like quite a high client base for me, is like in the tech space. And it actually like was kind of what helped me through the times of COVID, because I was 100% in person before COVID time. And then I had to basically recreate my business, like pivot, you said at the beginning in your intro. I had to completely pivot my business to being 100% from 100% in person to 100% online. So I was grateful to have that like tech industry as a client base because they were still doing stuff and working on stuff.
And they were already accepting of doing things over whatever video chat. I'm assuming you were there with some sort of graphics tablet and you were doodling as you were working with them. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I've been able to like work with people still digitally. And then like, you know, they do their magic with the AV team of people in the room and they can just like project me on a screen. So like they're in Las Vegas and I'm like in the woods, you know, so it's pretty cool that I can still stay like very remote for some of these jobs.
That is wonderful. So let's get into the process of what you go through with a new client and the sort of benefits that they get. So tell us what actually happens when people do engage with you.
Yeah. So once they're like, let's do this, I get a contract and at least a 50% deposit. Sometimes if they're new, brand new, I do ask for everything up front and send them a Google form to fill out. And in that Google form is a whole bunch of questions to try to cut down on emails back and forth. So where can I find your agenda? Where are we going to log on? Is there a tech check? What hashtag am I using?
Lots of preparation, lots of making sure that everything's in place.
Absolutely. And then I also send them a document that says, like, here's stuff about me. If you're going to introduce me, you could read this. Here's a headshot. Here's my logo. Like, I just give them a bunch of stuff. They don't always use it, and that's fine, but they have it.
I think that's a really, really smart thing to be doing, though, because we've said the word multiple times, niche. And for them, if they're the person that's standing up and saying, I'm bringing in Ashton, she's a graphic communicator. And people are going, what does that mean? And then they can actually say, well, you have already worked out the best way to present. And also for them to be able to do that for you. So that's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then a little bit of back and forth. I say, hey, where's the drop here? Who do you want me to invite to the Dropbox folder? Give me their email, create a Dropbox folder. And then when I'm doing the event, I just drop the images in there. Like if it's a live event, because it's all live, the graphics are immediately done. So they just like get them in there during the day or multiple days or whatever. Sometimes I'll do events where they're like, oh, we pre-recorded them or we don't want you live and you can do them later. Then we don't have to worry about that necessarily. But yeah, and accessibility is really important to me. So I included in the fee if people want alt text descriptions and also audio descriptions, like a captioned video with the graphic. So it's like a little video that has the still image of the graphic. There's captions at the bottom and there's just like a 30-second sort of audio with the captions that describes what the graphic looks like. So, you know, for people that may need to engage with it in that way. So that's something that I started incorporating in 2022. It's just like part of some of my accessibility efforts to try to make my work, just as accessible as possible. So I'm always like looking.
Sounds like you've come up with lots of really smart steps that could be replicated in other businesses. But you've got that unique aspect, as we say, about the doodling itself. Mm-hmm. So tell us about that part and how it helps people.
Yeah, so most people think in pictures, right? So, you know, we can be as cliche as we want to on this call because, you know, just because we can, you know, pictures worth a thousand words. You know, we've heard all of those things before. Because there's a lot of truth. Like, I actually really love cliches because it actually builds bridges and brings people together.
They're there for a reason.
They exist for a reason, right? So because most people think in pictures, people can connect with the information and how our brains think. Usually when we can kind of introduce multiple ways of learning at the same time, it can just like help solidify that information. So I really love the like learning, the memory retention aspect of it. But I also really love when I'm in meetings where there's like multiple voices where it can elevate the conversation and show clarity and connection and allow people to feel seen, heard, and valued as a contributing member in that conversation because they're literally seeing their words and drawings happening in real time and how it integrates with the holistic view of the conversation. So there's like the connect, like the human to human kind of connection piece that I really love in those types of situations. And then of course, I really love the, like, you know, if you go to a conference and there's like 20 presentations, you know, how are you going to remember all that information, right? Where if I have that graphic and you have 20 little graphics now, you can quickly look at it and go, oh, right, I remember when he or she said this, this, or this, right? You know, and if, because if you can remember something, you can actually potentially put it into action, which is what I would like to think most of these events want you to do, right? Is to like, not just sit there and have a good time, but learn something from these quote unquote experts and then actually do something with that information.
Yeah, so many presentations fall into the trap of box ticking. Yes, we have done a presentation. We have done death by PowerPoint, and it's a horrible thing to deal with.
Yes. So, you know, I also really am kind of picky when I'm looking for clients that they have to see those things. Whereas if they're like, oh, we just want like the cool art drawing person, I'm like, that I'm probably not the right fit for you. Right. I really want to work with people who care about people that they're working with. Right. If you're a conference organizer, you care about the learning of the people who are attending. If you're hosting that meeting or that strategic planning, like you care about the employees' ideas. Right. Because that's not always the case. You know, sometimes we do these things for many different reasons, like you said, to tick a box, right? So, you know, because like I said, I've been very creative, but I'm sure there's lots of quote unquote like artists or live illustrators that are like way better than me. So if you're looking for a piece of artwork, I am not your person. I also because I don't like editing anything. It's live for a reason. You get all the messiness. Of course, I'll go back and fix a spelling mistake. But it's live in the moment. That's what you get, right? And I find people who want to hire me and they see me more as the artist, they're so nitpicky.
Really?
And because I don't like to do edits, not going to be a good time. Like, I don't want to spend a day after a whole event just doing edits on all the graphics. Like, that sounds like a bad use of my time. So I like to work with people who understand and embrace the live aspect of it. And they're not nitpicky.
So that spontaneity sounds incredibly important.
It is, you know, and sometimes I have to warn clients when I'm in more of a facilitated type meeting, like conversations are messy, right? They're messy. The graphic.
Put your seatbelt on.
Yeah, like the graphic might be a little bit messy, like more messy than like a presenter standing up for an hour and they said, here are the 10 things to blah, 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 right? You know, if I'm in a day or two or 3 day long meeting and everything, you know, we're ping ponging all over the place, the stuff that I drew during day one might all be redrawn by day two. Like, we don't know. So I have to work with people who really like embrace the process and care about the process and caring how they got to that end result. Right.
So can you give me an example of a golden client? And obviously you don't need to name names, where you've gone along, done the wonderful, you know, you've done your thing. You've done the wonderful thing that you do, and it's had a huge result for them.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's kind of a funny thing because I get really invested personally into these topics that they're working in. And it's the ones that I start to like really fall in love with their vision and their mission, but I can't save everybody. So I wish I could join like every board of every client I've ever had, but that's just like not possible. So there is like a part of me that has to like remove myself from like their work moving forward. I try to set them up. I try to give them tips and tricks and things on how to use the graphic afterwards. I do also provide a document of that right up front too, also is like ways to use graphics. Just to kind of get them thinking. So I did like collated like every way that I can remember that anyone's ever told me how they've used it. And I put it in a PDF, and I do give that to clients as well. And so sometimes I don't always know the full extent of impact, unfortunately. But now that I've been doing it long enough, that there are a few people that, like, you know, they brought me in for strategic planning. Now 3 or 5 years have gone by and they've brought me in again. And now I can kind of go and go, oh, that's so interesting that how the conversation kept going. And obviously it was valuable enough that first time to get to the decisions that they needed to in that meeting, right? So I'm starting to kind of see some of those things a little bit more full circle when people bring me in multiple times with like years apart potentially, right? So
that makes complete sense.
Yeah.
So Ashton, if there was one piece of advice that people should take away, one message from our conversation today, what should it be?
I would say, like, don't be afraid to pick up a pencil every once in a while, right? Drawing can be your best thinking tool, right? We have to like reframe our perspective on what creativity and what drawing is. And that's why I do really like the word doodle, because it is a more friendly way to make marks to help ourselves think, which is like a new Sunny Brown, the author of the Doodle Revolution. She kind of like has a very quick TED talk, and that's like her new definition of a doodle, is like making spontaneous marks to help yourself think, right? So like, you know, carry a notebook with you, have some little paper on your desk. You know, when you kind of can engage a whole body experience into your own thinking, and remove, your keyboard and a Google Doc or whatever. It's just a fun and different engaging way to kind of like help you deconstruct some of those ideas that are really hard to just to think about or to type out. So I would just think, like, of course, I'm obviously a doodling advocate, like I said. So doodle away. It's going to help you. Even if it has nothing to do with the information, it's still helpful. That's what I would say.
That sounds great. And let's face it, we talked about cliches earlier, but the doodle on the back of a napkin, who hasn't done that at some point?
Absolutely. Yeah, sometimes I'll use that as an example because that's very relatable. And you're so right.
Ashton, where can people find you and what projects do you have that people should know about?
Yeah, so you can find me at mindseyecreative.ca. And we didn't even get to talk about it because we were talking about everything else. But I've been in a bit of more of a pivot in my business where I'm educating people on how to do this for themselves, for their own personal note-taking. So I just released a book a few months ago called The Beginner's Guide to Sketchnoting. And you can find that on Amazon and on my website.
Fantastic news. Well, Ashton, thank you for a fascinating call today. A really interesting kind of split out from a lot of the conversations that people have. So great to talk to you.
Good. Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Well, that's a wrap on another awesome guest episode for the Evolvepreneur After Hours show. Just before you go, if you like this episode, we would be very grateful for a 5-star review. Please also consider recommending the show to a friend or two. Make sure you subscribe for future episodes at evolvepreneursecrets.show right now. Until next time, I'm Richard Ray. And if you're an entrepreneur, make a start on your next great idea or doodle today.